From the campus of New Hope Christian College, welcome to Words of New Hope.
God gave Joshua the promised land after Moses died. He promised Joshua all the land of Israel. But even though God promised it to Joshua, Joshua still had to contend for every square inch of it. I need you to hear this. God has promised you and this church a wonderful future. But it's not just going to fall in our laps. We must contend for every square inch of it.
Aloha, and welcome to Words of New Hope with Dr. Wayne Cordero, pastor of New Hope Christian Fellowship in Honolulu. You know, you might listen to Pastor Wayne every day and hear all the wonderful things that are happening at New Hope and think that everything is just hunky-dory. Well, it's true. God is blessed in incredible ways. But today you're going to hear that it hasn't been without struggle, from health issues to lawsuits to roofs caving in. Seems that there is never a dull moment. Well, here's Pastor Wayne with a message entitled Refusing Victimhood.
You know, sometimes people think pastors are like Superman. They have to have that blue suit on with the red S. And because you got to deal with that suicide, and then over here, this person dying, and this one here, my kids going bazonkers, you got to fix that. Oh, by the way, I've got some problems here. And, you know, and we all have problems, but pastors are sort of expected to be Superman all the time, and you can never be Clark Kent. So you always have to keep the suit on. Even Superman had phone booths that he could visit and come out and rest for a while. I remember I was in Kona when we were on the Big Island, and our kids wanted to go to Hapuna Beach for a couple of days, so we decided to take a little break. So we went over there, and while I was there, I got a call from a lady that said, my husband's in the Hilo Medical Center. He's in the hospital. Come and pray for him. And I said, oh, I'm over here on the other side of the island. I'm with my kids. We're going to be here for a couple of days. She said, you don't understand. My husband's in the hospital, and I want you to come and pray for him. I said, well, let me get, you know, one of the... The church was still small, so we didn't have other pastors. But I said, let me get another leader to pray. She said, you're the pastor. You need to be praying for him. You need to come here and pray. I said, oh, I can't. What she didn't know is what we know now, that if I did pray for him, he would see Jesus. So, but I said, I can't right now. And she got so livid, she slammed the phone down. And the husband recuperated, he was fine, but when I came back, she had notified me that she's leaving the church because you didn't pray for my husband. So I said, ouch, yeah, I know, but gosh. Sometime later, I was over in Australia, and we had a pretty long week of crusades, so I teach 3 hours in the morning, 2 hours in the afternoon, a little break, and then a crusade at night. And I did that in Sydney, then Melbourne, and then to Perth. And in Perth, the evening crowd for the crusade is 12,000. And so 5,000 in Sydney and about 3,000 in Melbourne. And you're doing that throughout the week, so 5 days, and then travel in between. So by the time I was done, I was dog tired. I was so fatigued after a week. I was actually looking forward to the plane ride home. Because I would have 9 hours, I could put on some headphones and just go to sleep. So I finally boarded the airplane, and because I'm what they call a million-mile flyer, because I've flown so much, if there's a first-class seat, I just automatically get bumped up. So 80% of the time, sometimes 90%, I'll just be in first class. So I was up in first class, and I was so tired. But because I had so much adrenaline in me from doing the whole week, I couldn't get to sleep. I try, and I toss, and I just sit there, and my mind is still active. Well, I thought, oh, I need to get some sleep. Well, the flight attendant came down. She had a bottle of white wine. I said, I think I'll take a glass of one of those. So she said, okay, and I thought, I'm just going to gobble this down and go to bed. Maybe it'll help me. And just when I had my hand on that, someone tapped me on the shoulder, and I looked around. The guy said, hey, are you Pastor Wayne Cordero? You're on TV, aren't you? I said, yeah. He said, if you're Pastor Wayne Cordero and you're supposed to be this pastor, then what are you doing in first class? You should be back there. Someone else should be in you. You should have given your seat away. And what are you doing drinking that wine? I wanted to pull out his hair and punch in his eyes. But instead, I said, could you just let me sleep, please? And he said, well. And he walked off, and I looked, and he's over there sitting in first class, too. I thought, you get back there and let someone else come up. And I thought, you know, it's when you try to be Clark Kent is when you get nailed. So a lot of times, pastors never become Clark Kent because they have to be ready all the time for whatever. And then, but you're still going to hit kryptonite because you're human and you get tired. Well, 6 years ago, started a very tough season. Our church had grown, some of you that were around, to about 12, 13,000. And because we couldn't fit anymore in Barrington, we just asked satellites to go out and take 200 here, 300 there. And it was great in the beginning. We'd grown so much that after a while, you make a few good decisions and the church's finances are strong. Magazines are following and stalking you for articles. Awards are coming your way. And you get enamored with that at first, but underneath, you know you're Clark Kent. It ain't about you. But we started sending some things out, but right there at the peak, my dad passed away, and that took a huge toll on me. And on the outside, you just keep going, but on the inside, you're wrestling. And then my daughter, Abby, just a time in her life, she goes to college at my alma mater, and it's a Bible college. She got kicked out for some activity. And I thought, oh, no. And then she started living a lifestyle that was a little not the most moral, And she's fabulous now. I mean, she's come to Christ. She has a fabulous Christian husband. She's a wonderful mom. But at that time, that slice of her life, she was kind of going sideways. Well, Anna and I are wrestling with that. And then at the same time, while that's still going on, I get diagnosed with heart problems, and I have 5 blockages. And the doctor looked at it and said, 3 are 99% blocked. And if you don't get that taken care of now, you won't be around much longer. I was on the airplane that week going to Stanford for a very delicate surgery that had to go in and open those things up with some stents. I went to Oregon to just kind of rest because I was burnt out, have heart problems, got problems in my family. Just then, while that's still going on, the president of my alma mater, where my daughter got kicked out of, comes to me and says, we're in trouble. We're financially bankrupt. This is probably our last graduating class, and we're going to have to shut down. I said, no, 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 you can't do that. We've got to build some leaders. He said, well, if you can do something with it, fine, but we're going to shut it down. I said, whoa, let me talk to my staff. So I came back here, and I said, will you let me go and turn this thing around? And we'll use it as a part of our ministry and train leaders, but it's going to take 3 years. Can you keep everything maintained and strong? And I'll fly back here once a month or so, but you got to kind of let me run with it for a while. They said, no problem. So I go up there, and what I don't know is that the college had been going in the hole every month $110,000 for 3 years. There were over $3 million in the red. The first meeting I had was with the bank, and they came to notify me that our credit was cut. That's how we started. So I've got to turn, I've never worked harder in my life. I had to let go 70% of the faculty and rehire and rebuild and raise $3 million. So 3 years went by. And what I didn't know was during that time, 4,000 people had migrated out of New Hope here. So I thought, it's time to get back home. And when I did come back home, something had shifted in the DNA of New Hope. And some of the basics had been compromised. In fact, I had to immediately let go of 2 staff that had been sleeping together. So I cut that immediately, let another one go for an unforgiveness problem. And there was just some things that we had to change. There was an unaccountability and an independent spirit. And so we continued to decentralize, 2,000 more leave. Now, as that's going on, for the first time in history, we go into the red as a church. While we're still trying to figure out what to do because we're laying off staff to stay afloat, a huge rain happens, a storm, and the roof caves in at Farrington. That's on a Friday. We have services Saturday. We have to reroute all our people next door to the gymnasium, which is arid and hot. And we stay there for a little bit. As that's going on, I'm traveling, and I break my leg. and I can't stop because I got speaking to do at these conferences. So I'm limping on a wrapped, broken leg. And I didn't know it was broken. I just knew it hurt like crazy to walk on it. So I have ice on it, and I'm walking with this ice pack that I duct taped to my leg. While I'm there, we had hired a staff person to help me. While I'm there, I got news that he had been in an immoral relationship with the secretary at his other church, and he was to be dismissed immediately. So now I'm thinking, I got a busted leg, and this guy is doing this, and this is nuts. So I come back and get it x-rayed, and the doctor says, yeah, not only is it broken, it's infected. And it's about into the break of your bone, so we either open it up and scrape your bone, or we put you on intravenous antibiotics. I said, no, I can't do that. I got to preach Sunday. He said, all right, then we're going to give you a huge regimen of antibiotics, and we're going to do it in both cheeks. I was smiling for months. While that's going on, the SB1 comes up, and we testify, and we get nailed again. And then right after that, we started the musical Les Miserables, and so I don't know why I said yes to learn 31 songs. But after it was done, of all the people, I was the most miserable of them all. And it just happened like this for 6 years. And so this last summer, I had to go and make some decisions. I was just fried. And to just kind of open up the curtain a little bit, I didn't want the church to go through any more of that collateral damage because they were aiming at me, not the church, but the church would get nailed too. And I really felt that I had failed. Maybe I thought I shouldn't have tried to save the college, let it go. Maybe I shouldn't have trusted the people where I did, or maybe I should have built a building much sooner when we were larger than building leaders and planting out churches and sending people out. But I really felt that I had failed in many ways, and so I thought, but what is done is done. And I didn't have any control. I couldn't control this atheist and the suit and the money, and all. I can't control the roof and what happens in satellites or what's going on or what people decide to do. I not only felt like I didn't have any control, I felt I was out of control. And I thought, now is the time I've got to find an Elisha. I'm done. And so we started vetting people from all over the U.S. trying to see if we could find an Elisha. And I cried out to God. I said, God, you got to help me. And God just went silent on me. Ever have God just go silent on you? And I kept knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. And there was no answer at the door. So I took the sabbatical this summer and just kind of, I had to go find out. So I went out into the desert and cried out to God. God, I don't know what to say. I was having anxiety, and it moved into depression, and fear started. In fact, whenever it was time for me to come back and speak, this fear came on me. I thought, what is going on? And I'd cry out to God. And again, outside is jovial, but inside, as soon as you go home, it's like everything implodes and you're in darkness again. You got to try to get out of that. But I couldn't. So I cried out to God this last summer, and he wouldn't answer me. And I was depressed. I said, God, why am I depressed? Finally, God answered me. Finally, one day I was praying, and God answered me. But I wouldn't like the answer he was about to give me. I said, God, why do I have anxiety and fear, and I'm depressed? Why? Why? And God says, you want to know why? I said, yeah, why? He said, because you're too selfish. I said, what? I've been zealous for the Lord God Almighty. Israel has torn down your altars. And I alone am left. He said, you're just too selfish. You're thinking too much about yourself. I never asked you to think about yourself. I asked you to think about the people I'm going to send. You serve them. I asked you to be a field general, and you've chosen to be a prisoner of war. Because then you can sit in a cell, and they serve you 3 meals a day. You don't have to do anything. I asked you to be a general, and you've lost your heart for war. I looked up to heaven, and I said, excuse me, is there anyone else I can talk to up there? I know I'm talking to you, Father, but is a son available? You see, what happens is when you succumb or surrender to that stuff, you become a victim and you submit to victimhood. Because I can't do anything. I'm out of control. None of this was in my control. There's nothing I can do. And you make yourself a victim. Listen carefully. Satan is a headhunter. Your mind is his battlefield, and your future is his trophy. He wants to steal your and devour your future. And I was thinking wrong, and this is what God said. You're thinking incorrectly. You're thinking about yourself. You got bad psychology. What do you mean bad psychology? See, Matthew 6 says, the lamp of your body is your eye. If your eye is clear, your whole body will be filled with light. But if your eye is bad, your whole body will be filled with darkness. And if that light that is in you is darkness, how great shall that darkness be? And I was seeing things dark because my thinking was wrong. I was thinking about my comfort. What about me? I don't like this. I can't control anything anymore. And the Lord said, it ain't about you. I asked you to be an ambassador for heaven, and you became a prisoner of war. I asked you to be a field general, and you made yourself into a victim. Your thinking is completely wrong. You're thinking about yourself, and that has made you a victim. Then I realized, you know, you think about it, any study of successful people, you'll find that there's an amazing ability for people to overcome almost anything. I mean, people can rise. We've heard stories where people have risen above circumstances. They do it all the time. Physical disabilities can't keep a person down. Hardships or failures are commonplace among those who have achieved much. We can rise above almost anything, but listen, there is one thing you can never rise above. And you know what it is? The one thing you can never rise above is the way you think. It's the quality of your thoughts. That's one thing you can never rise above, is the quality of our thoughts. If you're thinking poorly, you'll never rise above that because your thoughts will stop you. Nothing in life will keep you down but your own thinking. That's why Matthew 6 says, a lamp of your body is your eye. It's the most basic of all keys. If you want a high quality of life, you better develop a high quality of thought. The way to improve your future is to improve the way you think about your future. And to a large degree, you are where you are because the way you think. In other words, it is the way we think that is the most important reason we are where we are in life. And God says, the way you're thinking has made you into a victim, Wayne. And depression is going to follow. And it sure did. You see, what I had done was I stopped fighting, looking out for myself. And without realizing it, I started surrendering. And here's what God told me. You can make yourself into a victim, or you can get back into the fight and fight for your mind. Because your mind is not healthy. And I realized that's exactly what I had to do. God said, you got to fight to get back. And then I began to understand. I was praying on the floor, and the Lord sort of said like this, you got to draw a line, and this is where you've been languishing on this side. You have to step over the line and say, I will never go back again. I must never go back again and start thinking that way because it shadowed my life. I cannot ever go back. I'm done and never go back. Now, you're going to have to fight to stay free. You're going to have to fight to stay free. You're going to have to fight to stay free because negative thoughts will come. What about that? Well, what about what happened? And you say, no, I must go on. God gave Joshua the promised land after Moses died. He promised Joshua all the land of Israel. But even though God promised it to Joshua, Joshua still had to contend for every square inch of it. I need you to hear this. God has promised you and this church a wonderful future, but it's not just going to fall in our laps. We must contend for every square inch of it. Now, God, by His Spirit's going to be right with us, but you and I have to fight to stay free from our past. So I drew the line. I actually drew a line in the carpet. I can still remember the yarn being parted, leaving a temporary mark there. And I got up and I said, I've got to step over this line and I must never return. And I stepped over that line. I did it physically. And I said to myself, I will never go back. I must fight to stay free. And everything changed. I mean, almost, not exactly immediately, but almost immediately, I started to see things differently. I started getting excited for the future, what God had in store. I looked forward to getting back. Everything changed. It was like everything switched. It was an epiphany. And it was right here, the way I was seeing everything, I made myself into a victim. Satan is a headhunter. Your mind is his battlefield. Your future is his trophy. I stepped over the line and things began to change in my life, my perspective, everything. Why do I share all of this? Reason is this. There's some of you that need to draw a line. Satan has caught you in the web of victimhood. Sister, it could be you, something that happened in your past, and you're being tethered to your past, and you can never walk into your full future if you stay a victim to what happened. Might have been an event against your will. Could have been something that took place, but you've been a victim, and you need to draw a line and step over it once and for all and never go back. Some of you have had a loved one pass away, and you are stuck in the past. You need to draw a line and step over and say, Lord, I can't go back there. I'm not going to languish in that lifestyle that I had. I was a victim to that. And you would be fighting with anxiety, and you're going to fight with fear, and you're going to fight with depression. Some of you brothers, you got to draw a line because of a failure that you were a part of. And it's been haunting you and stalking you. Some things that you have done, or maybe done to you by a boss or some person, an inheritance that you didn't get, and you're just stuck, you're a victim. And you're gonna excuse away everything that happens in your life because of that. You're a victim, and you need to step over that line and say, I will never be that way again. That's the only way you're going to apprehend your future. You understand? God has given us a wonderful future, but you got to contend for it. You got to fight to stay free from the past. Otherwise, it will suck you right back in like a vortex, and it'll capture you, and you feel victim, and then you have everybody to blame. That's exactly what Elijah did, and that's exactly what Job refused to do. And so I share it because so I think sometimes God has me go through stuff so that as I share it with you, you go, you know, that's what I'm going through. And we can do it together. Because see, I made a commitment to do life with people here in New Hope, not to shield you from the real life, that this is sort of me in private and then you see me here in public. No, it's got to tie together. And we got to see that you're not the only one going through those things. See, Elijah said, I'm the only one going through this. And you'll feel like that. You'll feel like I'm the only one struggling with this. No, you're not. There's a bunch of us. But if we can see that there's light at the end of the tunnel, God will give us courage to navigate that journey, and we'll do it together. And so some of you need to step over the line of faith today, and I want to give you that opportunity. Some of you at baptism need to step over that line and say, I'm not going to waffle through this. I'm going to identify with Christ. And a lot of you need to step over that line of your past and say, I know that's a past, but it's not going to hold me victim anymore. I need to lay hold of my future. And you got to get over that line. So let's be a people who say, I'm going to take a hold of my birthright. I'm not going to sell it like Esau. I'm going to lay hold of it. And I'm going to be a person who receives what God has for me all the way. Let's be those people. Can you say amen? Yeah, let's do it.
You've just heard a message entitled Refusing Victimhood by Dr. Wayne Cordero of New Hope Christian Fellowship in Honolulu. Now for Pastor Wayne Cordero, this is Del Gibbs wishing you God's very best and aloha.
What if there were a place where you could discover, develop, and fulfill your dreams? That place is New Hope Christian College.
New Hope Christian College is a place where everyone knows everyone. Your teachers really do care about you, they want you to succeed, and they're willing to partner with you to do whatever it takes to make that happen.
The education that I've received at New Hope has really equipped me to graduate market ready.
No matter where you come from, New Hope Christian College is a place where you can come to find community.
There's a place for you at New Hope Christian College. For more information, go online to newhope.edu or call 1-800-322-2638. New Hope Christian College, a place where dreams are released.